is not his birth name. Anatta means the destitute, those who do not have means that they need for their life. And Pindaka means to offer, to make offering of alms. And Anatta Pindaka was someone who had means. He was a businessman, and he used those means to help those who did not have means. And he became a disciple of the Buddha. And he first, when he heard the name, the word Buddha, it moved him very deeply, and he wanted to go and find that person who was called Buddha. And so he decided he would go the next morning when it got light. But he was so inspired, and he so wanted to meet the Buddha that he could not even wait until it was light. And so he couldn't sleep. So he thought, why don't I don't know if he had a torch or what, but why don't I try and find my way to the Buddha's monastery and see the Buddha as soon as possible. And so he found his way to the Bamboo Grove Monastery, where the Buddha was staying. And by that time, it was probably about 4 o'clock in the morning, it was beginning to get light. And the Buddha was already up and practicing walking meditation. And it was a little bit misty, and Anatta Pindaka did not see the Buddha, but the Buddha saw Anatta Pindaka and said his name, Sudatta, that is his birth name. And Anatta Pindaka, very surprised, who knows my name? Yeah. So that is the story of how Anatta Pindaka first met the Buddha and became the disciple. And after he had been with the Buddha in Rajagriha, Anatta Pindaka had to go back to his hometown of Shravasti. And he went back to his hometown with the intention to have the Buddha in his hometown. So he had to found a monastery there for the Buddha. So that is quite a long story, I don't know. But he thought there's only one suitable place for this monastery for the Buddha, and that is a beautiful park with trees. And that park belonged to someone else. It didn't belong to him. It belonged to Prince Jetta. And Prince Jetta did not want to sell his beautiful park to anyone. So Anatta Pindaka had to try and persuade him. And he bargained a little bit more, but still Prince Jetta did not agree. And then in the end, Anatta Pindaka said, okay, give to me as much of the land of your park as I can cover with gold. So Prince Jetta thought, oh, he must be very serious about getting this park. Didn't believe Anatta Pindaka, but the next day he saw carts coming with gold and covering the land. These are stories. I don't get too. I don't think that it's something absolutely according to what happened, but this is just a way of expressing the deep devotion of Anatta Pindaka to the Buddha. And we have to remember that Anatta Pindaka was not afraid of becoming bankrupt. he had already become bankrupt in the past, and he knew that he can survive that. So he did not have that kind of anxiety and worry that sometimes business people have. Anyway, when so much of the Jetta Grove had been covered with gold, Prince Jetta said, "Okay, stop, stop, that's enough. You can have the park." And the monastery was built, and that is where the Buddha often stayed and gave many teachings there. You probably heard of sutras that said that that day the Buddha was in Shravasti in the Jetta Grove. So Anathapindika brought many businessmen to hear the teachings of the Buddha, all his friends. Sometimes it said 500 businessmen. 500 is a number that it means many, many, many. Yeah, it's not exactly 500, but those friends of Anathapindika came and listened to the Buddha's teachings. And the Buddha usually taught the five mindfulness trainings. And this morning or this afternoon is the day for receiving the five mindfulness trainings. It's a wonderful opportunity to continue the path that Anathapindika took and to bring much happiness into one's own life and the life of one's family and society. So those are the kind of teachings that the Buddha gave, because these friends of Anathapindika, they were listening to the teachings of the Buddha for the very first time. And the Buddha considered that ethical training is the most important basis. From the ethical training, there comes concentration, there comes mindfulness, and there comes insight. But of course, there are deeper teachings. Deeper, not more necessary, or perhaps unnecessary, but the ethical teachings are very necessary as a basis, as a foundation. But the deeper teachings are also very necessary for us to be able to go further. And during this retreat, you have already heard some of the deeper teachings, how to go from the historical to the ultimate, and how to bring the historical and the ultimate together. So you've already been initiated into those deeper teachings. So Anathapindika continued to listen to the Buddha's teachings. His whole family came to listen to the Buddha's teachings. And there came a time, as it comes in everyone's life, that Anathapindika fell ill, fell seriously ill. And it was obvious that he was not going to live much longer. So when he first fell ill and was not able to come and visit the Buddha and listen to the Dharma talk, the Buddha went to visit Anathapindika to encourage him in the practice. And then when, after that, the Buddha maybe had to move somewhere else, and so he entrusted the teachings to be given to Anathapindika to his senior disciple, Shariputra. Shariputra had always been a very close friend of Anathapindika from the very start. When Anathapindika had gone to the Jetta Grove to build the monastery, it was Shariputra who went with him to advise him. And Shariputra and Ananda went together to visit the householder, Anathapindika, when he was very sick. And when they first arrived, they asked, "Friend Anathapindika, how is your sickness? How is your health? Is it getting better? Or is it getting worse?" And Anathapindika said, "Friends, they're not friends. He shouldn't call them friends. What do you call them? Venerable monks. That is the Indian way. Venerable monks, it does not seem that my health is getting any better. In fact, the pain is getting greater all the time." So Shariputra and Ananda sat at the bedside of Anathapindika. Anathapindika wanted to sit up, to welcome the monks, listen to their teaching, but he was too weak. And Shariputra said, "Friend, please don't try to sit up." And then Shariputra began to give a teaching. I think many of us have been at the bedside of someone who has not had much longer to live, and we have some experience of what to do and what not to do. But in this case, Shariputra knew that the best thing to do is to water the seeds of deep happiness in Anathapindika. Because when someone is in a lot of pain, and when someone is also has fear, not knowing what is going to happen, is the pain going to get worse, and am I going to die, and that kind of fear, then what that person needs is the seed of deep happiness to be watered. And so Shariputra knew very well that the deepest happiness of Anathapindika was the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. So Shariputra began to talk about the Buddha, began to describe the qualities of the Buddha. The Buddha is the one who is fully enlightened. What happiness to have in your life as someone as enlightened as the Buddha. Someone whose action and understanding go together. Someone who is like a charioteer who can lead humankind. Someone who is worthy of all respect and worthy of offering. And then Shariputra went on to describe the Dharma. The Dharma is very deep and lovely. It is not like ordinary philosophies and teachings that we hear. Because the Dharma can liberate us from our suffering. I remember the first time I heard the Dharma. That was when I was in Greece. And I came late to the Dharma talk. And the Dharma talk was in Tibetan. And a monk was sitting next to and translating. So there's one sentence in Tibetan, one sentence in English. And so that monk was telling the story of the rope and the snake. So in the twilight, someone is walking along the road, and there's a rope lying in the road. But because there's not enough light, that person thinks that it is a snake, but it isn't, it's a rope. And thinking that there is a snake lying in the road in front of me, his heart began to beat very fast, and he began to feel very afraid. But then someone comes along with a torch, and we say, oh, it isn't a snake. It's only a rope. And all the fear vanishes like that. No more fear. It doesn't take time, doesn't need to think, oh, is that really true or not true or something. But as soon as we can see that that is not a snake, it's a rope, then all the fear is gone. So when I heard that, that is the Dharma that I first heard, it went very deep into me. And I said, yeah, this is something I've known all the time, but why nobody ever told me it before? Most of the things that we are afraid of, they are ropes, not snake. And when we can see their real nature, then we can lose our fear. So that is, so that anyway, that is the Dharma is very deep and lovely. It is not an ordinary philosophy or teaching. It is something that can remove our afflictions, our suffering. It is something that we can come and see directly for ourselves, and we can choose whether we want to follow it or not. And it is akalika. It is outside of time. It's not that you go to your first Dharma talk and you don't have to practice the Dharma for years and years and then see a result. You can see the result of the Dharma straight away. The first time you do walking meditation, the first time you practice mindful breathing, you might be able to see the wonder of the Dharma straight away. Of course, your practice may get deeper later on. The Dharma is compared to the ocean. The ocean slant. And it gets deeper. But when you first, on the shore, you first put your toe in the ocean, you already feel the worth of the Dharma. And then you gradually go deeper and deeper into the ocean of the Dharma. And then the third thing that Shariputra shared is about the Sangha. The Sangha is a precious jewel. It is made up of four pairs and eight kinds of holy people. As soon as we enter the Sangha, we are a holy person. Yeah. And of course we can make a progress in our holiness, but it's said that once we enter the stream, which is the part of the first pair, we cannot go back again. Shrotapana. You enter the stream of the Sangha, the Buddha, and the Dharma. And you may, having entered the stream, you may say, oh, I haven't been to Plum Village for 6 years. I haven't practiced for 6 years. But somehow that seed has been watered in you and is always there. So after 6 years, you come back again and you take up your practice again. And that is, you are a stream enterer. So the Sangha is the basis for our practice of mindfulness, concentration, and insight. And we always come back to the Sangha for that nourishment. And we want to be a cell in the Sangha body. So we want to contribute our practice to the Sangha. And at the same time, we want to be able to profit from everyone else's practice in the Sangha. And sometimes on some days, you feel your practice is not going so well. So you you really don't contribute so much to the Sangha. You receive a lot from the Sangha. You say quietly to yourself, "Dear Sangha, today I am very tired. I did not sleep very well. So I fall asleep in the Dharma talk. I fall asleep in the sitting meditation. So please practice for me." And then you don't worry about falling asleep. Actually, falling asleep in a Dharma talk, it doesn't matter. Thay said one time that he prefers his students to fall asleep rather than take notes. Because when you take notes, you are up in your intellect, and the Dharma, which is supposed to go from heart to heart, may stick in your intellect. When you fall asleep, your alaya consciousness continues to receive the Dharma, even if you, after the talk, you can't exactly remember what anyone said. That is how I that is how I chacha, no. That is when I go out of a Dharma talk. I ask myself, do I feel different from when I came in? Am I practicing more joyfully than when I came in? And if the answer is yes, I know that even if I don't remember anything from the Dharma talk, that it has had an effect. So at that point, when Anathapindika had listened to the teachings about what had brought him the deepest happiness in his life, automatically he became more relaxed and his pain lessened. Because when we are tense, the pain is much, much more. And I think you may have recognized that yourself when you have been with somebody who is on their deathbed, and you have come and you have taken their hand and started to massage maybe another person at the other side, and immediately that person becomes more relaxed. And eventually the relaxation is such that there is a happiness there. So that is an age-old wisdom that we have. But Shariputra wanted to give Anathapindika something else. Now that Anathapindika was relaxed enough, it was possible for Anathapindika to concentrate, because the next part of the teaching that Shariputra was to give demanded concentration. So Shariputra said, "Now, friend Anapanasatipindika, please meditate like this." And began to lead the meditation, guide the meditation. So guided meditation isn't something that we do in Plum Village and no one else ever does. It was done in the time of the Buddha. So these eyes are not me. They are not mine. They are not myself. I am not caught in these eyes. So part of our process when we are on our deathbed or when someone else is and we want to help is the ability to let go. To let go of the idea that I am a separate self. There are certain things that belong to me, like my body, and I don't want to let go of it. So, we begin with the sense organs, which we always think that these eyes are mine, these eyes are myself, I don't want to lose them. But Shariputra said, they are not you, they're not yours, and you do not need to be caught in them. That means you can let go. And then the next part is we have to go to all the sense organs to see if we can let go of them. Our ears, which we consider to be so important for us, will make us possible for us to listen to music, make us possible to hear the sound of the wind in the trees, to hear the birds singing, and we want to hang on to that. We are caught in that. Where were we the other day? Walking on Hampstead Heath. Oh yeah. I was in London the other day, walking on Hampstead Heath. And when you came to a very high place with a very beautiful view, there was a kind of message there and say, beware, this view will stay with you for the whole of your life or something like that. Yeah. So sometimes we need to beware, that is true. We need to beware. We need to enjoy that beautiful view, but not to get caught in it, not to hold on to it. That beautiful view we just enjoy in the present moment, just as we enjoy the singing of the bird in the present moment. The bird is sing a song of the undying and the unborn. The bird sing a song of ultimate joy. But we don't hold on to that. This nose is not me. Is not mine, is not myself. I am not caught in this nose. I can let go of my nose. I know that maybe in a week time or that my nose will turn into ashes, so I can let go of that. And this tongue is not me, is not mine, is not myself. So to have at your bedside the Venerable Shariputra and Ananda, who have practiced this meditation many times and have been able to let go of the idea of a separate self, is very lucky, that will give you, the person on their deathbed, a lot of energy and capacity for insight. But it's not sure that at that moment we will have Shariputra and Ananda. If we are lucky, we will have the equivalent of Shariputra and Ananda from our local Sangha. But it may not be like that. And so this meditation is something we train ourselves in from now on. And this body is not me, is not I, is not mine, is not myself. How many million of bacteria are in your body, not the same DNA as you have? What about in each cell of your body, about the mitochondria? Yeah, they are not your DNA. So every night before I go to sleep, I wish the bacteria and the mitochondria and the fungi and the whatever else is not my DNA, which I couldn't really call mine, to have a good rest. But then I don't know, maybe they have to work all night too. As I breathe, I need the mitochondria. So that may be an illusion. Yeah. So this body is not me, it's not mine. That is a very freeing meditation to be able to do. And finally, this mind is not I, it's not mine, it's not myself. So if I have eyes, they are not much use to me without an object. So there need to be the forms, the colors, the light, all those things. And I can consider that the forms that I see are mine. That somebody was, Japanese monk or something, was asked one time, do you regret anything when he was about to die? Do you regret anything? And he said, oh, I just regret one thing, that I will not be able to witness the beauty of spring and summer and winter. So normally when we are on our deathbed, if we have the Sangha there, they will ask, do you regret something? And that really means, is there something you want to confess? Is there something that you have done that you would like to say you are sorry for? But he wanted to show, no, there's nothing I've done, but I regret I will not see these things anymore. So another monastic story, huh? Then some monks were crying because their master had passed away. This is a different master. And one of the senior monks said, oh, don't cry. Our master is there in the mountains and the in the forest, in the scenery, is here in all our surrounding. So that means that the master had become part of the surroundings, and not only become part of the surroundings at his death, but had become part of the surroundings during his whole lifetime. It's like when you walk in the upper hamlet, or maybe also in the lower hamlet and the new hamlet, you feel a thai, huh? Yeah. You cannot avoid the feel thai. So we don't need to be afraid that when we die, we will not be able to see these beautiful things, hear these beautiful things. Because if we think like that, we are still caught in the idea of an I who hears, an I who sees. But in fact, the eyes, huh? There are always eyes there to see. There are ears to hear. And we can become one with the things we want to see and the things we want to hear. For other people to be able to see and hear them. So we go through all the senses. Huh? This sound is not me. It's not mine. I can let go of it. I don't have to hold on to it. The sound of the voice of Shariputra leading the guided meditation is not mine. I can let go of it. And that voice of Shariputra, it will continue to guide meditation for many people. This is something we need to look into a little bit. From if we go back to our historical and ultimate, one time we have the tendency to say, "Well, I won't be here anyway." We have the tendency to think these. The young people will have to suffer all the consequences of global warming, but I, because I'm older, I won't be there. I won't be there to suffer, so I won't have to go through that. And sometimes maybe the young people also think that. Oh, you're old, you don't have to worry. But that is not a good thinking. For not a right thinking on my part. It may mean I'm not so responsible. I hope it doesn't mean that. So from that point of view, it's not right thinking. But also from the point of view of the reality of things, it is not right thinking. Because once this body has been consumed by the fire or buried in the earth, where does it go? And the mind that goes with the body, where does it go? It doesn't go anywhere. So we will still be there in some form or another. Yesterday we were reading about the touching the earth, Mother Earth. What were we talking about? Mother, you take me back at death. You give me life, you take me back at death. So that is very beautiful. When we die, we become one with Mother Earth. And so all that Mother Earth has to go through with, we continue with Mother Earth. So that is more close to right thinking. and this perfume of the rose is not me, it's not mine. We discriminate a little bit about what is smell good and what doesn't smell good, but depending on which species we are, different things smell good or not good. Mm. But this taste is not I, it's not me, it's not mine. I think when we are on our deathbed, we're probably no longer attached to a good tasting food anymore. Huh? But there are some stories about people who are attached. Sometimes when you become a vegetarian, huh, you give up certain things. Mm. Like anchovy sauce, huh? That is fish sauce in Vietnamese. Huh? And you like that taste so much, but you really determined to become vegetarian, and so you decide never again. And you put it, bury it under the earth or whatever. But then on your deathbed, you regret. You regret, why did I give up this taste? No, this has truly happened. Huh? And you ask those people who are around you, they ask you, do you need anything? Would you like something? And you ask, please may I have some anchovy sauce, fish sauce. And this is something that I had witnessed. And then everybody around says, no, because it's bad karma. If we give you that, then it may influence your progression on the spiritual path after you pass away. But the Thai said, that is not the right approach. Thai said, you should give it. You should give it because then taste it, they will see it's horrible. And then they will be able to give up their attachment to it. Whereas if you say no, it, you can't give up your attachment. So that is a way of looking of a Zen master to help his students. So this touch is not me. I am not caught in this touch. We know that when somebody is on their deathbed, it's very important to practice massage, to massage the feet, to massage the extremities, because the feeling begin to go out of those parts. So we have to meditate according to this. This touch is not me. I am not caught in this touch. In order to be able to see that this touch isn't something special for me. This touch is a wonderful interbeing, which I don't have to be caught in as myself. And I can let go of it. And this thought is not me. I am not caught in these thoughts. How wonderful to be able to let go of our thinking, not to be caught in our thinking. That is when the thoughts can be like a cloud in the sky. They go past and they come and they go, but we are not caught in them. And we also know, and it's true with the neuroscience, that the eyes and the the optic nerve and so on, and the form is not enough to make the orchid that we see. In order to see the orchid, there has to be consciousness. So the I consciousness is also something that I need to let go of. My I consciousness, ear consciousness. All of our senses need consciousness in order to be able to bring to us the form that we think is outside of us. The song of no coming and no going, which we sometimes sing to someone on their deathbed, or we sing at their cremation, says that over there, the wide ocean and the sky with millions of galaxies, all these things arise from the depth of consciousness. That is, if there was not consciousness, these things, the stars would not be possible, the oceans would not be possible. And after that, if you meditate on the five skandhas, that is the body, the feelings, the perceptions, the mental formations, and the consciousness. You have to see that those five things that we consider to be ours, our emotions, our perceptions, they are not ours. They are not a separate self. And we have also been learning about our actions of body, speech, and mind, and how they are what continues us after we go. So our perceptions, our emotions, our feelings, of course, they have a continuation. They don't just disappear like that. Our consciousness has a continuation. But to remember, your consciousness is not I, it's not mine, it's not me, it's not that you become consciousness when you die. That is a wrong view. And then the three times are not me, are not mine, are not myself. My past is not mine, what I remember. My future is not mine. My present moment is not mine. So this is a very deep meditation. And after Shariputra had finished leading that meditation, friend Anathapindika, you have meditated that everything that arises is due to causes and conditions and does not have a separate self. That is called the meditation on emptiness. It is the highest and the most profound meditation. In the five aggregates, that is the five skandhas, bodies, feelings, perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness, there is nothing that we can call I, a person, or a soul. Ignorance is the inability to see this truth. There's another sutra that we often read in Plum Village, and that is about what happens to the Buddha after the Buddha dies. And we had a retreat once in Plum Village. It's called What Happens When You Die? And the conclusion of that retreat was that you don't die. That the die is part of that historical dimension, but no birth and no death is part of the other dimension. We like to think that there is a soul that will continue when this body disintegrates. And sometimes if we don't believe in a soul, we substitute consciousness, an individual consciousness that continues when the body disintegrates. So for an example, this match, you will think that it is the body, the matter. And then when maybe at conception, or I don't know, depending on your belief, at conception, a consciousness or a soul will enter that match in what we call the flame. Yeah. And so that the fire is like the soul, and the fuel or the is like the body. So this is a basic duality that we as human beings have. And on many occasions, the Buddha had taught that there is no such thing as a consciousness that is separate from the body, a body that is separate from the consciousness. And when the conditions are right, the consciousness and the body arise at the same time, together. There is not one that is there before the other. They make each other possible. In the same way as when you have a match, when the conditions are right, then there will be a flame. The flame isn't there before, and actually the fuel is also not there before, because before there is a flame, you cannot call it fuel. It's only a fuel when it has a flame. So now we have the flame, because the causes and conditions are enough. The causes and conditions are in the sulfur, in the wood, in the oxygen, and in the movement of the fingers. It makes the possibility for there to be both the flame and the fuel. Before that, it was not, those two things were not there. So now we have another flame. Or is it the same flame? That we don't, it's a difficult question to answer, huh? Is it the same as the match flame, or is it a different flame? Who says the same? Who says different? More people say different than the same. Then there's another, neither the same nor different. So one time, the King Milinda asked his monk teacher, Nagasena, is there someone who transmigrates from this body to the next body? And Nagasena said, no, great king, there is no one. And then the king didn't understand. He said, give an example. And so Nagasena said that, say you have a lamp and you light another lamp from the first lamp. has the first lamp transmigrated to the second lamp? And the king said, no, teacher, it hasn't. Yeah, so that is the Buddhist teaching on there is no reincarnation, there is no transmigration. So now, if we decide that maybe the no more fuel, no more wax, and we decide, yeah. And then the next question is, where has the flame gone? Has it gone to the north? Has it gone to the south, the east, the west? So the answer to that is, when the causes and conditions are right, the flame is there. And when the causes and conditions are not right, the flame is not there. Yeah, the flame has not gone anywhere. So it is the same when your loved one or anyone dies, you ask, well, where have they gone? Have they gone to, you know, this heaven or another heaven? And the answer is they have not gone anywhere. Because one thing is that we can, this is just an example, huh? This is when we are so-called alive. Then this flame, it is giving out heat and light. And that heat and light go into the universe. And then, so they already have gone out into the universe. They have, the person you ask, where have they gone? Oh, they have gone into me. They have gone into my brothers. They have gone into my sisters. And if I really want to be in touch with them, I can be in touch with them in myself, in my brothers, in my sisters. I can be in touch with them in the scenery that they lived in and enjoyed. Yeah, because they have not gone anywhere. So that is a teaching of the ultimate dimension. Huh? Friend Anattapindika, you have meditated that everything that arises is due to causes and conditions and does not have a separate self. When he had practiced to this point, the layman Anattapindika began to cry. Venerable Ananda asked him, "Friend, why are you crying? Has your meditation not been successful? Do you have some regret?" The layman Anattapindika replied, "Venerable Ananda, I do not regret anything. The meditation has been most successful. I am crying because I am so deeply moved. I have been fortunate to have been able to serve the Buddha and his community, yet I have never heard a teaching as wonderful and deep as the teaching I have received from the Venerable Shariputra today." Sometimes when we hear the teachings, it brings tears to our eyes. Because we see that those teachings can convey something that is much deeper than words can actually convey. We may use words like a match, but the words, they are not the teaching. They are just a finger pointing to the moon for us not to be caught in. So, Anathapindika had a very deep request on his last request, and that was, please tell the Buddha that we lay people, we have the capacity to receive these teachings. So please, the Buddha, give these teachings more often to the lay friends. And we receive those teachings from with our heart. And we put them into practice. And one thing that Thay teaches his lay students, when they make a commitment to a deep, long-term commitment to live with someone, with their loved one, to ask a question, darling, where do you come from? Like the flame, huh? When the causes and conditions are right, you arise, huh? And where are you going? So in the historical dimension, where are we going? We're all on the same path, going to the crematorium or to the or to the burial ground. That is where we're going. So don't be in too much of a hurry. Slow down, enjoy every moment. But in the ultimate dimension, when the causes and conditions are not sufficient, I will not manifest in this form. I will manifest in other forms. And that is a game of hide and seek for you to play. This body is not me. I am not caught in this body. This body is not you. You are not caught in this body. I am life without limit. I have never been born and never died. Over there, the ocean and the deep ocean, the wide ocean and the sky with millions of galaxies all arise from the depths of consciousness. Life and death are only a game of hide and seek. Life and death are a door through which we go in and out. So smile with me, take my hand, we'll wave goodbye. And tomorrow we will meet again. We shall always be meeting again at the source, at the true source. We shall meet again on the wonderful path of life. I cannot hear. Who can sing for us, huh? They can sing, huh? This body is not me. I am not caught in this body. I am life without limit. I've never been born and I've never died. Over there, the deep ocean and millions of galaxies all arise from the depths of consciousness. From time without beginning, we've always been free. Birth and death are only a door through which we go in and out. Birth and death are only a game of hide and seek. So smile to me and take my hand and wave goodbye. Tomorrow we shall meet again at the true source. We shall always be meeting again at the true source. We shall meet in every moment on the million walks of life. And you also have a guided meditation on nirvana, which you may have already heard. When we see that the oceans and the rivers are in us, is in the blooming of a lotus. The blooming of a lotus, this is the advertisement bit. The most recent edition has a meditation on nirvana. So, dear friends, thank you for listening, and happy continuation of the path that you have already been continuing here. And we will continue for the rest of this lifetime and for many lifetimes to come. So please enjoy the three sounds of the bell.